Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Freik here. I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us today. This episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Ke, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness industries. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call and let's talk. Visit retailvoodoo.com or email diana@retailvoodoo.com to learn more. So, hey, before introducing today's guest, I want to give a bit of a thank you to Miss Kate Ruffing of Flashpoint Strategy, who introduced me and Miss Jessica. This is a few months ago. We had some great conversations. Kate's company, Flashpoint Strategy, provides fractional C-suite services for food, beverage, and wellness brands. So if you want to check out what she's up to, take a look over at her website at flashpointstrategies.com. Great. So today we get to talk with Miss Jessica Tanani. All right. Did I get that right?
You did get that right.
Thanks. Woohoo! The CEO and co-founder of VerdeBio, a cannabis research company. Jessica is a biotech professional with over two decades of experience in life sciences. A serial entrepreneur and cannabis activist based out of Washington State. She has been active in changing cannabis research legislation and led the way in developing a topical pain relief and wellness brand called Basic Jane. Well, hello, Miss Jessica. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited.
Great. And you're in Seattle, right?
I am located in Seattle, and I am back to working out of my home office. Apologize for the background, but I'll be back in the office soon once I get a booster.
Yes. Oh, okay. Right. And do we have a sense on when those are coming about? I think they're still focusing on initial shots now, right?
I'm immunocompromised.
So gotcha.
I think I might get mine today or tomorrow. Pretty soon here.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. As soon as the FDA comes out. So okay. That'll good. Be good.
Excellent. 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 Well, before we get too deep into our conversation, I always love to give an opportunity to my guests to share a bit about their brand. We've got two, but let's just start with VerdeBio. Can you tell us a little bit about VerdeBio and why it exists?
You bet. So VerdeBio is a cannabis research company. We founded ourselves about 8 years ago with the goal of doing research on cannabis. And cannabis is kind of a big word out there, a lot of different categories for it. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we really wanted to go after medicinal utility of cannabis. And so our goal was to do research on different plant varieties, different compounds, how you would use those compounds. And so we founded a company around it. It started with a clinical research nurse, myself, a lawyer, and a brand guy. So that's how we started.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And because I'm a little bit curious and I want to go back into VerdeBio, can you tell us a little bit about Basic Jane too and its relationship to VerdeBio?
You bet. So when we started VerdeBio, we were really interested in researching cannabis. And one of our co-founders' moms approached us. And she was in her 80s, had really bad knee arthritis, and had been told that she couldn't use NSAIDs anymore because of kidney damage.
Okay. Okay.
And so they said, she said, "Can you do anything for me to help my knee pain?" And we were really interested in utilizing either CBD or THC for pain relief. And so quite frankly, we kind of started playing around with different formulations, looking at the research, trying to figure out how could you make a topical product that relieved pain. Mm-hmm. And so we spent about 2 years researching it and developing products. And we found one that she loved. And turns out all of her friends also loved it. And so they approached us and said, can you commercialize this? And so we did commercialize it, and now it's available for topical pain relief. But it really was born out of one of my co-founders' moms just needing some pain relief.
I like the simpleness of the brand name, Basic Jane. It's not trying to be, it doesn't have that, it has maybe a little bit of a wink and a nod to the industry, but it's not super cool and hip. It's just really, this isn't doubling down on CBD or hemp or anything. It's just, this is a brand that it kind of meets your needs where you need them. At least that's what I'm taking from it.
Yeah. And it was, you know, we owe Jason, one of the co-founders who's used to run a brand shop with kind of figuring out the brand around it. And you know, our goal was to really be a brand that an 80-year-old would be fine walking in and having it in her purse and not worrying about who's going to see it or what they're going to think about it.
Yes.
Just make it really clean and simple and just like the products that people could be confident that they would work and not be, there's still kind of a stigma, I think, using a lot of those products. And we wanted to really make it so that there would be less of a stigma if somebody's bought a product.
Yeah. It's still somewhat of a taboo, particularly with, which I find incredibly interesting, but there's a taboo a little bit with that, the older generation, the baby boomers, which is weird because they're the ones that kind of initially brought us into this whole concept of using cannabis on a regular basis, at least in a much larger way than it was before. So find that interesting. You've got the people who are absolutely interested in trying it and those that are absolutely against it. And there's a hard and fast line, particularly with that generation. I think as we age down, we see a little bit more blurring.
Yeah. It's really funny because my 95-year-old grandpa is probably one of our top consumers. He, you know, goes through gallons of it and he calls it his ointment, and he calls and says, Jess, can you send me some more ointment? But one of his friends we ran into, and he made a comment that I was the one that was pushing the drugs. And so, you know, I think that there is a stigma around it. And especially because I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between hemp and marijuana. A lot of people still associate hemp or CBD products with potential products that, you know, do have recreational utility. Yeah. And so people think, am I going to get high? What's going to be the effect? And I think there's still, even in the industry, a lot of learning that goes along with that.
Yeah.
And so people, I think, are just concerned that they're using a drug and not necessarily a benign topical pain relief product.
Well, we can. That comes out of 100 years of high impact propaganda. But if we could get people to understand that, you know, hemp and marijuana and then the toxifying effects are kind of the same as, you know, you could take wheat or fruit and turn it into an alcohol, but that doesn't mean that the original version of it is bad in any way, shape, or form. So yeah, a lot more education still to be had there for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that people use cannabis for different reasons.
Yeah.
There's, you know, a medicinal component that is really one of the reasons that we founded the company is how do you get it in formats that somebody that has MS or, you know, certain forms of cancer, whatever, can utilize it and have the highest probability of it working for what they want it to do. And so there's truly a medicinal effect in with epileptic kids and things like that. And so that's one bucket. And this wellness bucket, which is, I have topical pain. How do I relieve it? I want to take the edge off my anxiety, you know, kind of supplement wellness. And then there is, you know, especially on the marijuana, this recreational component. And I don't think that people understand the different utilities of it. It kind of all gets clumped together in in one bucket, and you kind of have to differentiate them to understand what your product is going to do and what you want, what product you want to buy.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I see that you won an award, I think, from Agilent Technologies in May, but I don't remember if that's part of VertaBio or Basic Jane.
It is part of VertaBio. And my partner in the company, Kirsten, who's a clinical research nurse, put out a a request for whoever deserved a fairly expensive piece of equipment. And they asked her to write a paragraph. And she wrote a paragraph about the fact that we're a woman-owned company, that we could really utilize the equipment, especially on the research side. And it was awarded to VertiBio. And so it's a very expensive piece of equipment, probably about $70,000. And we're currently in the process of getting all the components in-house. We're pretty excited. And it will allow us to streamline research. And it will also allow us to test products at different levels to the manufacturing.
Okay.
So right now we send out all that testing and it takes about 2 weeks to get the data back. And so when we look at like manufacturing and then packaging and then getting it out, what we do now is we manufacture and package kind of at the same time.
Yes.
And so getting that timing right where we can actually get the test turned around. If we can do it internally, we can get that test. And so we don't get in this in a scenario where we package something and we have to destroy that. And so enabling us to test all along the R&D cycle and do it quickly is hugely advantageous to us.
Yeah, I can see that. I could see that. Well, let's kind of go back a little bit before VertiBio. Now, we've learned that you've been in biosciences, which is kind of a big brushstroke of definition there for over two decades. And now, where before cannabis, or have you been experimenting or in researching cannabis this whole time, or what were you doing beforehand? What led you here?
No cannabis research before this. I was really traditional biotech research. In fact, you know, even doing some viral research before this. And so right out of grad school, I ended up working for a human genetics company.
Okay.
And we did a lot of testing, in fact, some on pathogen detection along the way. And so we, I worked human biology, plant and molecular biology, and did that. I was working for other people for about a little over 10 years. And I got to the point that I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I know that I didn't want to work for the company I was working for.
Got it.
I had a really good 6 years with them, but I was kind of at the end of that 6 years.
Yep.
And so I quit the job, and I had worked for a female CEO for a large period of time in that. And she had gone over to one of the large venture capital funds.
Okay.
So I called her and I said, you know, I don't know what I want to do, but I know that what I'm doing right now is not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And she said, maybe you should form a consulting firm. I have some business for you. And so I didn't know what to do or how to do it. So I went to LegalZoom and formed an LLC and started a consulting firm. And she started sending me business on essentially due diligence and background and helping companies that they had invested in, and picked up a partner along the way. And we started, we co-founded two companies out of it. Both got acquired. And so when the second got acquired, I didn't want to go and work with the company that had acquired. And so didn't really know what I wanted to do. Legalization had just occurred in the state of Washington. So we went and my co-founders and I were having happy hour one night. And I had used cannabis medicinally. I'm not a very healthy person. And at one point I was biding time for a clinical trial. And clinical trials are kind of expensive and hard to get insurance to pick up. And so in the time that I was doing that, I started using cannabis to help maintain my weight. And it actually worked really well, but it was really difficult for my biotech mind to wrap around because it was not consistent.
Right.
It was difficult. It worked, but I couldn't really help other patients navigate it. So we were at this happy hour and another patient called, and she was super frustrated because she had cancer and she was using it to help her with energy and kind of be able to entertain her grandkids. And the product she had been using changed and it didn't help her anymore.
Oh.
And so I hung up the phone and I said, you know, this is not rocket science. You just need to research, make a consistent product and help people. Like, it's not hard. And they said, well, let's form a company. And so that's kind of how VertiBio became. And when I, at the time when I did it, most of my biotech friends told me I was insane for doing it.
Really?
Yeah, I had a really good biotech career, and going and researching cannabis was a little bit strange for a lot of them to comprehend. And it actually was really hard for us to get the proper infrastructure in place to research cannabis. Mm-hmm. So it was at the time you could grow cannabis legally with a state license, but you can grow it to sell it.
Right. Not for commercial purposes.
Mm-hmm. No, you could grow it to sell in a 502 store, like a commercial outlet.
Oh, got it. Got it.
Destroy it. But if we decided we wanted to research it, that was against the law.
How bizarre.
Right. And we sat down with the regulatory bodies and we said, we want to research it. And they said, that sounds amazing and like a good idea, but it's against the law. We can't allow you to do it. And I asked them, how will we be able to do it? And they said, you got to change the law. I said, I'm a science major. I don't really know any poli sci. Like, how do I change the law? And the head legislator or the head regulator at the time gave me the name of two senators. And she said, one's a Democrat, one's a Republican. Call them both. See if they'll help.
Excellent.
And they both did. And we changed the law, which I didn't even know how you went about. I didn't know the difference between the House and the Senate. I didn't know any of that.
Wow. So is your name on a bill then?
So you'll see me testifying a lot on a bill.
Okay.
The bill was drafted originally by the senator's staff. And so you'll see a lot of public testimony. There was actually three separate pieces of legislation that ended up going through across three different sessions. And so I learned a lot, a whole lot.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So in order for you to even get into VertiBio required a legal act.
Yes. A new legislation at the state level. And I had no idea how you would go about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, one of the bills we got fully through and then it got vetoed at the governor's level because it was, there was a politics going on and everything.
Of course.
Vetoed. And when it got vetoed, I said, I don't know what we go back and do. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of calling the senators at every step, these two female senators, and saying, what does this mean? What do I do now? You know, how do I do this? And I think they were super nice. And I also think that I helped them on the science side. They didn't really know much about cannabis science. And so I helped them a little bit, but they helped me a ton on politics. It's a whole new, I barely passed history.
Well, I think history and politics are different. Because politics to me, I think that's every time I think of politics, I think of Game of Thrones. That show is actually in between fighting, it's politics. It's one or the other, right? What's your next move? How are you going to do this? Whose hand do you need to shake? What favor do you need to give? It seems like that's the whole process.
And, you know, especially when it comes to the word cannabis, you know, there are some very strong political lines around that word.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think we had the first unanimous piece of legislation that ever went through Washington State on the subject. And, you know, our take on it is we're going to prove certain parts of cannabis are wrong.
Yeah.
And maybe unhealthy and different things along that line. Yeah. We're going to prove that there are some really good things about it. But you can't say that it's wonderful or evil until you do the research.
Right. And was that the selling point? Is that really the moment that everybody went, oh, yeah, this is in our best interest? Or was there a little bit more politicking than just straight up facts?
A little bit of both. there's some regulators that are, especially on certain in the House that have a tendency to be backgrounds in law enforcement.
Oh, so, sure.
You know, there's different, you know, obviously different people feel differently about cannabis, but there are very strong opinions about it. And we just had to kind of overcome those and say,
gotcha.
Hopefully research will prove whatever it is that you believe. Mm-hmm. If you believe in it strong enough, enable the research. And but you know, there were some things that we had to fight that were fairly unique. So for example, we got within the bill that you could do research with universities.
Okay.
But within the bill, we also couldn't be within 1,000 feet of a library, which means that we actually technically couldn't research at a university.
Oh,
you know, okay. On every 1,000 feet, you're in a library zone.
Right.
And so we had to go back and get some allowances for that. A couple of those things were kind of difficult to get allowances, but we had to sit there and say, here's a map of University of Washington.
Right.
If they decide that they want to do research at some point, where does it fit on campus?
Right.
If you say we can't be by daycare centers, playgrounds, libraries, right. You know, this zone, there's nothing left on campus.
Yeah. Right.
So we did get some carve outs, but there was a lot of kind of interesting hurdles that just kept popping up.
Yeah.
And all we wanted to do was research. So,
yeah. That's so interesting to me because the tobacco industry has quite a different, has far more control over those types of things. So it's just so, it's to me, it's all very interesting how complicated it is. And it'll be just time, I think, before people continue to ease, as people continue to ease. And
yeah, and I think it gets back to this, you know, one bucket that people really get held up on the recreational component
of
marijuana.
And yeah, I get it.
That there's medicinal and wellness attributes.
Yeah.
And a huge product class that doesn't even have that recreational THC component in it. And it's very difficult for, I think, people to not just think of recreational use.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Well, so at what point now this is kind of the beginning now, at what point did you guys know that you were headed in the right direction by creating this, by creating VertiBio? Like, was there a moment? Was there a client? Was there a farmer? Was there a brand? What happened?
There were a couple things, but I think the biggest thing was our first acquisition offer.
Okay.
That was the first, like, okay, we've actually like built something that there's a significant dollar figure associated with from an acquisition standpoint. Mm-hmm. We definitely had other like really exciting milestones along the way. And some of them have been, you know, fairly minor or people might think are somewhat stupid. So for example, when we originally launched, we have a product that comes in little jars. It's a
cream. Yeah.
And we were labeling, stickering all those ourselves. Mm. And so we had a sticker, a labeler machine, and somebody sat there and made sure the labels went on straight. And I sat there a number of times and I wasn't very good at it. So I ended up not sitting there as much as other people.
Gotcha.
But we, when we finally got big enough to be able to order in a pallet of pre-printed, like printed on the jar bottles, that was pretty significant. And the pallet was giant when it came. And we had never handled that kind of volume of containers. Mm-hmm. So there was a number of minor things like that we as an office were really excited that we hit these minor milestones. But the biggest milestone was, you know, having somebody approach us and say, what you built, we would like to buy. So that was, I think, the biggest one so far.
Well, and how is that? Well, I'm going to ask this in a little bit, but I do want to find out, like, so we've got the acquisition now. Are you supporting brands out in the marketplace? Are you supporting farmers out in the marketplace? Is this more research for legislative purposes or just strictly research purposes? How are you impacting kind of the larger community?
You bet. So a couple things. So one of the things is we're still an independent company. We have not been acquired by anyone. We're still independent. Mm-hmm. So we do research on a couple different things and it impacts different groups. So
gotcha.
we do research on the plant. And in that research on the plant, we attempt to make stabilized plant varieties that will produce the same thing. So if you think about roses, for example, there's white roses, there's pink roses, there's red roses, and you can get varieties that look the same when you plant them. Mm-hmm. And so we create those from a cannabis perspective.
Got it.
For commercial purposes, the majority of the ones that we produce don't have any THC. They're hemp for large scale commercial purposes. So we work with farmers on supporting them with plant genetics that they can plant that will produce exactly the same thing on 100 acres of land or whatever that looks like. The next thing that we're really focused on is how do we take those products and put them in a form and format that helps a person? So, you know, if you think about pain, for example, if you think of a wellness application, if you have a sore elbow, a topical product would be awesome for that specific sore elbow. You could put a topical CBD product on your elbow and get relief on your elbow. But if you have pain in your elbow, knee, hip, back, you may need something a little bit more systemic. And that's when you get actually maybe into an oral product, something more analogous to an Advil versus Aspirin. And so we look at how do you get those form and formats to get the product where somebody wants it. And, you know, cannabis historically has come in a lot of different form and formats. And it's interesting because if you look at CBD, for example, which is one of the top hemp product, hemp components out there, it's a fat. And so it goes, if you mix fat and water, bad things happen. You know, kind of think of your salad dressing. But there's a lot of, you know, like a cream, it goes in wonderfully. It mixes up nice and well with those other fats. So we have to think of how do we get it mixed in a beverage? How do we get mixed in a tablet? What does that look like? So there's a lot that goes into what do people want and how do we make it so that it addresses the need that they want? And then we commercialize those through Basic Jane. And we right now only have commercialized topical products. Other ones in R&D, the issue to some degree has been there's been a little bit of ambiguity from the FDA on oral CBD products. We're building them and we're trying to figure out when's the right time to allow those to see the rest of the world.
As people are reaching out to you with questions, and I'm going to talk specifically from a CPG standpoint, since our audience is mostly in that category. What are the questions? What are the questions that you wished? Well, let's start with what are the questions that you are being asked the most, and whether it's about a bioavailability or farming, you know, who should we be working with, et cetera? Like, what are those questions that you're getting right now the most?
You know, it's funny because a lot of the larger CPG companies are still trying to wrap their head around the difference between hemp and marijuana. That's the big one we get a lot is, you know, what's the difference there? And once you get them over, hemp doesn't have THC, marijuana has THC or 0.3, you know, that. And then the second question becomes, what do we do if we want no THC in our products? Which is a good question. And there's different ways that you can approach that question. The one is you can make plants that produce very limited to no THC, which is not easy to do and something you're working on for a long time. The second thing you could do is when you process it, just like you process sugar cane into sugar, you can eliminate different things along the way. And one of those things you can eliminate with processing is THC using different ways. So those are common. The other common question that we get is how do you formulate, which is quite frankly surprising to me because most groups are looking to put 10 to 50 milligrams in something like a, you know, a beverage can. And that's not very much fat. into a beverage can, especially when you think of all the frappuccinos on the and the Kraft salad dressings and all those. So, you know, I think people are very used to mixing fats and liquids, but for some reason they think this, especially CBD, that is, you know, behaves in mysterious ways, and it really isn't. And so we get a lot of questions around how do I manufacture using CBD?
Right.
Which, quite frankly, kind of surprised me, because if you can take and manufacture a shelf-stable salad dressing,
right,
that's 50% fat, you know, making something that's 0.01% fat shouldn't really be that big of an issue.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think when you're probably talking to formulators, innovators, people who are more on the science, I could be wrong. I don't know that you're necessarily talking to operations and marketing people. I'm assuming you're talking with those innovators. They probably start with some of those basic questions because that's just their process, but yeah. Not sure.
And I think some of it is that nobody's really played with these molecules. Yeah. And there's a certain amount of like urban legend around. Mm. And if you look at some of the food chemistry that's been around for mm-hmm. a lot of years, that hasn't necessarily been used on these products because right. access to it hasn't been available.
You right. can't,
you know, license intellectual property historically to play with these molecules and mm-hmm. products or different things like that. So I think that it's built up a little bit of an urban legend that they're really, you know, special fats mm-hmm. That behave in such a way that other fats yeah. don't, but you know, that's not necessarily the case. Yeah. So
what do you wish they were asking you? I know they asked those questions, but what do you wish they would ask you?
I wish that they would ask about how do I make varietal specific products. So mm-hmm. when you think about it, most people are looking at let's take CBD, and which is, you know, that what most of the hemp products are.
Yeah,
people are looking at how do I make a CBD product, a beverage, let's say, and how do I get CBD in that beverage can. They're not asking how do I take everything else that's in that plant that may be of value. So there's a ton of different terpenes and flavonoids and things that may add value to the product. And how do I get a lot that will produce the same beverage and carry those forward? So if you think of something like hops and beer, mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. done all the time. You know, people buy a specific varietal of hops and they use it in, you know, a Pilsner uses a specific varietal.
Got it.
A Bud Light uses a different.
Yeah.
Wine's another perfect example. You know, different grapes will produce different varietal wines, and people like the flavor and the combination that specific varietal leads to. And I think what's happened in the hemp space is two things. One, those varietals didn't exist. So people mm-hmm. just went out and said, you know, everything's the same. And it's kind of mystery. I think it's, you know, very similar to probably hops 100 years ago or gotcha. Grapes. Back when you had red wine and white wine and called it good kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And it's just an immature market where people haven't realized that they can ask for a varietal specific extract. And I think what that varietal specific extract will allow you to do is do more marketing and branding off of the terpene. Mm-hmm. So if you think about something like a limonene, it's an energizing compound that, you know, people market off all the time as, yeah. you know, with loose marketing terms like energizing or, you know, awake or different things like that. Mm-hmm. And so if you had an extract that had high levels of that and you can consistently produce that, then you may be able to market an energizing beverage, you know, calming beverages, things like that off of the whole plant extracts. And mm-hmm. it may allow you to differentiate versus just how do I get a couple milligrams of CBD in a can.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of, it's marketing that I think went on in wine 100 years ago. Maybe, I don't know when. I'm not a very big wine consumer.
Well, it might be a little bit more like the craft beer market. You might have already said that, but like craft beer really took big beer, which was an aggregate of hops from whatever blends, you know, a certain set of blends. And then craft beer came along and started to play with certain types of hops. And so I feel like there's a similarity there for our listeners to kind of benchmark against. Is that fair?
It is fair. And I think it would allow long-term differentiation in your product class.
Yep.
And I am concerned that that product differentiation is going to be difficult in this product class. People kind of step back and say, what do I build for the consumer and how do I make that different and something they really like?
Yeah.
And so I wish more people would kind of think about the varietals and where the plants. I also think consumers are getting more savvy on wanting to know where their ingredients come from.
Oh, absolutely.
And so being able to, you know, the craft beer is perfect where I think a lot of the craft brewers go back and actually can pin my hops was grown on this X acres of farm by this grower. Mm-hmm. You know, they tag and they bail every lot that comes through and they're very proud of that. And I think that hemp right now, if you go and buy a hemp product, oftentimes that the hemp biomass could come from Oregon, it could come from China, it could come from Kentucky. You just never know. And I think more savvy consumers, as it becomes more mainstream, will want to know, where was my product grown?
Yep.
How was it grown?
Yep.
They're just more interested in the ingredient story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Definitely seeing interest, non-traditional, I mean, some traditional farmers, but I met a handful of people the last time I was at Expo East, I think it was. So 2 years ago, 2 years, yeah, 2 years ago that when I was at Expo East, met a handful of people that were not farmers that had put money down on farming property and said, or farming property, well, this is, you can tell where I, my, where my world is, but on land to farm hemp, saying that there's just the demand for hemp is huge. And right now, a lot of it is coming from overseas just because of the strict legislation, growing it and then being able to cross lines, get across state lines. And there's a lot of barriers to research and product innovation, product development, getting these products into consumers' hands. Especially, I almost wonder, you might know this, I feel like it might even be easier to import hemp in than it is to grow it and transport across state lines. Am I seeing that correctly?
So that's kind of a complex question.
Oh, okay.
So when you harvest the hemp, farmers will have a ton of biomass.
Right.
And of that biomass, you know, oftentimes only a few percent of it is the CBD.
Gotcha.
And so they can then have to potentially cross that to a different state. And in order to cross it across the state lines, you have to have low levels of THC.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain barriers to entry that make that crossing across state lines very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the biggest things that our farmers in Washington face is Idaho has been very anti-hemp.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from a federal government perspective, they've been told you have to allow transport across Idaho. They have seized a number of trucks.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, it's an agricultural crop. It gets mildew and it degrades and it's not meant to sit on a truck for months while people litigate
what actually happened
to it. And so you're right in the sense that there's been a number of hurdles for farmers that, and it's also been very difficult for farmers to export product out of the U.S. And I think that's getting better. You know, for example, I think our states, Washington State's doing a really good job of trying to normalize it as an agricultural commodity on the hemp side and figure out how they open up those export channels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just coming in, it's actually going out to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
But that has not been, it hasn't been set up. And so it's difficult to set up.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. The state and then legal and the conflict there also makes it convoluted. And it, you know, it can be a state like Washington State that's a bit more progressive, where you can have the growing and the processing, the manufacturing and the distribution can happen. But as a brand owner that wants to do any kind of significant growth, it's that crossing the state line, whether by plane or by truck or, you know, and all of those touch plates, yeah, places from the planting, from the seed crop, all the way to getting it into a retail channel or to customer's hand. So yeah, still tricky.
It's still tricky. And, you know, quite frankly, every state is setting up slightly different rules on what that consumer product needs from a regulatory perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, Oregon is looking like some regulations coming down for oral products where you actually have to have them tested in Oregon. Mm. You look at different state by state, you know, down there, it's looking like products will probably only be able to be sold in their marijuana stores, oral hemp products. Up here, you are not allowed to sell those in our marijuana stores. So it's just this like conflicting law. And I think long-term, hopefully, that it looks like the Senate's going to step up and do a little bit more rules and regulations around what the products are and how they should be tested. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can get a more even framework around that, it would help brands to be able to cross the state lines and, yeah, and also it would weed out a lot of bad players out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
You know, testing is not cheap. For example, when we manufacture testing, we're at about 12 cents a bottle in testing. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but when, you know, you're wholesaling out for $4 and you have packaging and you know, all the, that's a significant,
yeah,
cost. I mean, it's actually more than the cost of the CBD in our products. Mm-hmm. So when we look at that, you know, some of the other players might think, why test?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then that can backfire on the industry at large.
100%. And, you know, the other thing is it's not just about adding CBD to your products. It's about making sure that they work. You know, from a topical perspective, one of the things that we had to do was figure out how do we get it across your skin? Because your skin all day, right, long is meant to keep things from going across it. Right. So for example, one of our most popular products is a spray, and alcohol is really good at getting things across your skin. Mm-hmm. And so alcohol is the carrier. We have these molecules called carriers, and they literally carry the CBD across your skin. Because otherwise, if you don't have a carrier in your product, it just sits on your skin. So, you know, somebody may use a product without a carrier and go, oh, didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Not going to use any other product, you know, or if you're not dosing properly in an edible or a can or something, they'll say this product class didn't work, or maybe, yeah, it caused me to feel funny, or, you know, who, yeah, knows what, and they just don't ever come back to that product class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I got it. Wow. So we talked a lot about the barriers and the hurdles. Maybe talk about what do you see coming up? Like where are you seeing some where are the cracks opening up that is going to just be able to in the near future? Maybe you can only speak to it at a Washington state level, but if you can talk about it regionally or even nationally, what do you see happening here that looks like it's going to help brand owners from, at least from an innovation standpoint, start to go, okay, yeah, if I'm into innovation, maybe in 2 years, maybe in 6 months, maybe in 5 years, like, do you have some visibility and what does that look like?
Yeah, I think that in this space, one of the biggest hurdles is that even in the hemp side, we constantly say we're playing with like one hand tied behind our back. Mm-hmm. And it's really because two things hit this space particularly hard. And the first is change in regulation. Mm-hmm. And the second is banking. And both things, uh-huh, are things that normal businesses don't, I think, really think of. So, mm-hmm, you know, for example, on the regulation side, you could be in a state that allows you to manufacture, let's say, CBD dog treats. And you could be manufacturing those and be super happy and doing it. And then all of a sudden your state could say, you know what, you're not allowed to give that a manufacturer with that. We're going to pull your food safety license. And you can really have zero recourse. So the, mm-hmm, rules and regulations around hemp are constantly changing, yep, at both a federal and a state level. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that I really see happening that will change the industry is more federal oversight. The Senate has been really proactively picking up the ball on that. And I think that if you have federal oversight that says you can't change the rules, these are the rules that everybody plays by, and you're going to be able to manufacture, but you're going to have to do these things to manufacture, I think most people are willing to do those things.
Yeah.
But if you're one day playing by these rules, and then the next day by these rules, and the next day by these rules, it's really difficult to run a business that way.
Yeah.
And it's also really difficult to bank hemp. Mm-hmm. And people don't really realize that component. But for example, if you're running an online business, you need a merchant service processing, somebody that runs your cards. We're fully disclosure on working with our merchant service processors. And we've gone through 4 and 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it will be something that a bank will be bought by a different bank. Mm-hmm. And the different bank says, hey, we don't want to bank hemp. Mm-hmm. It's federally legal, but they have the right to work with whoever they want.
Yeah.
You overnight can lose all your credit card processing.
Like yeah.
Overnight. You wake up and people are sending you emails like, I can't process orders.
Yeah.
And so that is also on the federal side. There's new banking legislation that's going to come through that.
That's great.
So eliminating those hurdles is huge. And then the second thing is, I think guidance also on a federal level on from the FDA that you can consume these products.
Yep.
And you know, the downside of that is, I think the minute you say that, the larger brands start playing. That
right.
Follow the little brands. Most of the brands in the CBD space, there's not a brand with more than single digit market share. And it's because everybody is a small company or relatively small, taking huge risks.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's a catch 22 when these things come in place. It'll definitely make it better to run a business and have security in how you plan and run your business. But it also means that larger companies will come in and want to compete against you.
So I feel like this is a little bit like the naturals and organics industry relived under the cannabis moniker right now. Because what I feel like is, I feel like the Procter & Gamble's and the PepsiCo's and the Kellogg's of the universe are interested in the product, but they need stabilization from a regulatory standpoint in order to move forward with something like this. And I, because as product developers, they're always on the lookout for what can add to their bottom line. And I wonder, I think that I would be curious to find out if PepsiCo is, you know, in Skunk Works somewhere, building some sort of CBD-based product for when legislation comes through so that they can be, or Coke or Dr. Pepper or insert whomever, have them in Skunk Works and ready to roll so that the minute something is approved, they can drop and run, because I think the demand is there.
Yeah. There's not a large company in the CBG space that I have not heard doing something. And a lot of them are doing something in Canada. Doing things in holding companies that they have, maybe a company that does protein drinks or something that people don't know about. You know, they're just doing it internal R&D, but they're all doing it. And, you know, the interesting thing, especially from CBD's perspective, from a wellness perspective, the wellness categories it addresses are extremely huge.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, anxiety.
Yeah.
Sleep.
Yeah.
Pain. You know, like kind of the top things, if you were to go through and say, like, what do you want to have addressed in your life?
Right.
You know, they're kicking off those giant buckets. And so I think it's a market that they cannot ignore.
Right.
But it's a market, like you said, with a lot of regulatory ambiguity. And I think that's why you see a ton of small companies like us really being able to prosper. So it's this catch 22 for us that we want to see more stability and for us from a regulatory perspective. Mm-hmm. But we also know that just kind of opens the box for everybody else to come play.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's when we'll know. when we'll know? Well, you, all of the smaller players are proof of concept because you're able to grow and there's a proliferation of them. Easy for me to say, I guess. So I think that's encouraging to hear that the major brands are playing in there. So to me, that means that it's just a matter of time before it comes through because, again, the demand is there, the need is there, and you have really large influencers. I'm going to call those major CPG brands really heavy influencers on regulation that once they've identified something that's going to work for them is probably going to put a little pressure on in those places that they know they can be effective in.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think everybody really hoped that the big outlier is the FDA saying that right. You have this product for sale for human consumption. Mm. And I think everybody really thought that was going to come about a year and a half ago. And mm-hmm. then COVID hit. And you know, the FDA has been really focused on everything COVID, which
right.
is justifiable, but it's really kind of led to this limbo space. And it's mm-hmm. interesting because I've heard a couple rumors of the larger brands just maybe thinking that it's okay. We're just going to move. Maybe we're going to move forward without the regulation. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if that happens. But
okay,
it's a large market, and I don't think they can ignore it.
Yeah.
And it also allows some of these companies to get into the wellness space that might not already be in it.
Right. Exactly. And at the end of the day, all of these new innovations end up becoming features and benefits or ingredient profiles as they normalize. So brands will exist that will have these as ingredients, but they won't be marketed as a CBD brand. It'll just be whatever beverage is that happens to have CBD in it. Just like with alcohol, nobody goes, buy this beer. It's named, you know, Miller Coors. It's Miller Coors that happens to be an alcoholic beverage, right? So I think that will change pretty rapidly as well.
Yeah, and it'll be really interesting to kind of see how it plays out. But I really do think that's why people are going to get into the varietal specifics, is mm-hmm. that people want that product that differentiates mm-hmm. their brand and gives them, you know, cannabis makes a lot of amazing molecules. And it is a huge producer of terpenes, which are the things that make us smell good or, mm-hmm. or add flavoring to products. And they produce a ton of it, you know, maybe weight volume up to 20%. And so when we look at CBD, it's one ingredient, but there's this whole other proliferation of molecules that are produced that I think will drive people to do varietal specific mm-hmm. products. Yeah. And then we got rope and clothes and
right.
feed and
yeah, the uses are endless. And as I heard from Jane Pinto, I don't know if you know Jane Pinto, of First Crop. She is a hemp grower herself out of Arizona, Colorado, Colorado. The regenerative benefits for the land and the soil to growing the product. I mean, just like the crop itself and the outputs and the process is just pretty darn close to a miracle plant.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, they have it planted at the, what was the nuclear site in the old Soviet Union?
I know which one you're talking about. They have the whole show on it, right?
I know, right. Why can't I remember the name? But they've actually planted hemp in the site to try to strip out the soil.
Really?
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing what it can strip out of the soil. And so, you know, it is something that if you had land, you know, maybe you could get organic certification or something earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a number of
uses. Oh.
So we'll see how that kind of emerges.
That is a really interesting prospect. Hey,
hemp, go ahead. There's hempcrete, like people are trying to build, you know, concrete out of it. And, and I think Porsche just came out with a car that they built out of hemp.
No, really?
Yeah, I don't think it's commercial. It was kind of a car show situation. So mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of uses for it outside of what we kind of use it for.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so what's the future of VertiBio? What's on the horizon that you want to share with folks?
Well, we're really excited. We're working with some partner farms, and we have a lot of plants in the ground this year. So we're pretty excited on getting those out and harvested. There'll be a couple different varietals that'll come out, and we're pretty excited for, we have some products, additional products that we'll be launching. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of oils that are very specific to the varietals that can be used in specific products. And then we have additional basic Jane products coming out. So we're pretty excited about those two things.
Awesome. Well, Jessica, our time is almost up, but I have a few questions that I ask everybody. So we'll do this little bit of rapid round. You've already shared so many different facts. So I don't know if you have anything else, but I always ask my guests if there's some interesting fact that you like to share about your product or industry that I call it a happy hour factoid. Anything that you like to share with people today?
You know, our research lab grows both marijuana and hemp in it. And okay. So, you know, I guess the interesting fact is I've kind of come to terms with breaking federal law every time I show up to work. So I guess, you know, people are always fascinated by that. Like you show up and I said, we have state, you know, and we've met with the attorney generals and they seem pretty good about what we're doing and we follow mm-hmm. the rules, but, yeah, we have no federal oversight. So I guess that's an interesting tidbit.
Wow. Yeah. Well, are there any women leaders or rising stars in our industry or not that you would like to share with our listeners? That's somebody you'd like to elevate or simply admire for the work they're doing right now?
Well, so we are, our research space is actually in a building that's run by probably one of the top producers of marijuana edibles in the mm-hmm. state of Washington.
Okay.
And it's pretty much run by a woman. It's a husband and wife team, but she's the one that like does all the operations. So Jackie Brassington, she's okay. awesome. And they run, you know, giant beverage lines, Willy Wonka chocolate lines in there. It's CPNG. It is a facility that you would think was not making an edible product, and it is
really
amazing, and she does an awesome job. So
wow,
pass it out to her.
Oh, excellent. And then what brands or trends are you watching right now? What do you have your eye on and why?
That is a good question. You know, lately with COVID, I've kind of been looking at, and it's completely outside of this space, but mm-hmm. kind of looking at food trends.
I sure.
think with the combination of really extreme heat and COVID halting some distribution channels, I've been yeah. really looking at food, and I'm not a huge meat eater, and yep. so I've been really looking at like alternative protein and greenhouse growing and
okay.
you know, transfer of some things that we traditionally grow outdoors into like
yes.
stacked horticulture.
Yes.
I'm pretty fascinated by whether that might be coming a little bit sooner. We see it in a lot of like Asian countries and things yes. where space is an issue. We've never really had that in the US, but I think, you know, with the fires, the heat
yes.
and COVID, with labor, it may be something that we kind of see more of. So I've been kind of yep. keeping my eye on that. And I know it's super random, but been interested in that the last few weeks.
No, I think I'm fascinated by that too. I know that in Northern Europe, there's a lot of that. I can't remember what it's called. I'll call it warehouse farming. And the environmental footprint of that type of farming is really incredible. Like the number of resources that it takes to produce the same type of product is extremely diminished yeah. because you don't have waste. You don't have the kind of water waste. You can maintain consistency. You can use solar panels now. I'm super vertical farming. I'm yeah. super interested in vertical farming too. I think there's, and you can bring it into the city or into the suburbs. Right. And reduce that whole transportation issue as well. I think there's a lot there for us.
Yeah. I think it may be kind of the perfect storm to see that come to the US mm-hmm, mm-hmm. year. You know, we've always had a lot of land on the West Coast.
Yep.
Access to a lot of labor
mm-hmm.
and a lot of water. And I think those three components have kind of dried up this last year. So,
yes. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with Jessica Tonani. I hope I got that right again. Co-founder and CEO of Verda Bio, Jessica, if people want to learn more about you or get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Probably the best way is to send an email to info@basicjane.com.
Great.
It will end up with me. If you want to learn more about our companies, we have vertabio.com and we have basicjane.com. Basicjane is the consumer products. Vertabio goes over more of the research that we do.
Got it.
And, you know, feel free to look up both or send an email to info@basicjane.com.
Oh my goodness. Jessica, thank you so much for your time today and for all the work that you're doing in our industry.
I appreciate it being here.
Of course. Okay, everyone. Bye for now.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.